Word of mouth.
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 This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. When it comes to investing and saving money, a lot of us seek the advice of professionals to make and grow investments. Spending money is another thing, from buying groceries to splashing out on a car. Spending is more habitual, immediate, intuitive even, and we rarely feel better about it afterward. So what are we doing wrong? Elizabeth Dunn and Michael Norton are two rising stars in the field of behavioral science. They're co-authors of the book Happy Money, The Science of Happier Spending. And the book presents new research that upends the old axiom, money can't buy happiness, proposing that if it can't, you must not be spending it right. The book is now out in paperback. And Elizabeth Dunn, welcome back to Word of Mouth.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Your book is broken down into five key principles to teach us happier spending. Let's go through these. The first principle is buy experiences. Now, what do you mean by that?
Well, the idea here is that people consistently get more happiness from buying experiences like trips and concerts and special meals than from buying material things, from couches all the way up to houses.
But trips and concerts and meals, though exciting and adventurous, can also be expensive, right? What's the difference?
Well, they're expensive often, and they tend to feel frivolous, right? Because you buy a couch, you're going to have that for 10 years. You buy a vacation, it's over in a week. But ironically, research suggests that the pleasure of that experience can actually last longer than the pleasure that we get from, say, something long-lasting like a couch. The thing is that experiences tend to bring us closer to other people in a way that material things don't. And experiences also make good stories. You're liked more if you talk about your experiential purchases than if you talk about your material purchases. So over time, experiences actually seem to provide higher returns in terms of happiness than material things.
And experiences like what? Going for a walk even? Going to a movie?
Well, going for a walk is a nice, cheap experience, but often we can use money to buy an even better experience, you know, going for a walk as part of an African safari, for example, or, you know, spending less money, but say, going to a movie, going out to dinner with a friend. Often we make trade-offs. You know, I've had friends who said to me, oh, well, I really can't go out at all for a month because I'm trying to save money to buy a new car, for example. And I actually think that that's not necessarily a good trade-off. I think although we feel like buying experiences might be a sort of waste of money, in fact, it seems to be one of the best uses of money in terms of delivering long-term happiness.
How about these big purchases, though, that adults make? One, of course, that people go through is buying a house, certainly an experience, but any data on how that stacks up emotionally?
Well, amazingly, even though buying a house is kind of like the quintessential aspect of the American dream, it turns out that homeownership really doesn't do much for our happiness. There's not a big difference between homeowners and renters in terms of happiness. Once you control for other sort of important variables like income, what you see is that homeowners weigh a little more. They're about 7 pounds heavier than renters on average, but they're not any happier. So it suggests then that, you know, putting all of our money into a home, particularly when that means, say, not being able to go to movies with your friends because you're house poor, you've put all your money into your house, well, that might not be such a great trade-off when it comes to happiness.
Okay, let's move on to the second principle to happier spending. Make it a treat. Now, what does that mean?
Well, this idea was actually inspired for us in part by comedian Sarah Silverman.
Oh, she's from New Hampshire.
I know. And she's a favorite of mine. And she has a saying, make it a treat, that she tells all of her comedy writers. So she finds that, you know, her comedy writers on her television shows that she's worked on want to indulge in all kinds of really gross jokes. Mm-hmm. But she says, no, you have to make these gross jokes a treat. You can't use them constantly or they're no longer as funny. They don't deliver this kind of emotional punch. And the same turns out to be true with our spending. If we always indulge in things we like, you know, not just gross jokes, say, but lattes or fancy smoothies or whatever, those things that, you know, should be a treat tend to kind of fade into the background. And we start to indulge in this sort of habitual spending that no longer provides us with as much happiness. So we would argue that people should turn their favorite things back into treats by actually having them a little less often.
Okay. You also write about companies being able to do that too, transforming products to seem more like a treat, like Charmin toilet paper.
Yeah, and you wouldn't, I mean, most of us don't think of toilet paper as a treat, but Charmin actually had a remarkable campaign where they did something called Potty Palooza, where they planted these luxury porta potties in unexpected places, like at sporting events where you expect to find just horrible, gross porta potties. They put in this amazing luxury porta potty complete with television and beautiful hardwood floors and skylights, so that this experience of kind of waste management at public events actually became a treat, a kind of special experience. And so, you know, we would argue if Charmin can do it, anybody can do it. If we can turn toilet paper back into a treat, we can turn just about anything into something that's actually an opportunity for happiness rather than just a habit.
Elizabeth Dunn is with us. She's Associate Professor of Psychology at the University of British Columbia and co-author of the book Happy Money, The Science of Happier Spending. It's out now in paperback. All right, let's get on to the third principle, buy time. How does one buy time?
So this is one that's near and dear to my heart. And the idea here is that when you pull out your wallet, you should stop and ask yourself, how will this purchase change the way I spend my time? And I would argue that many of our purchases, things like a new pair of shoes or a really nice purse, have little bearing at all on how we spend our time. And so I would suggest that purchases that are not going to affect our time may not be worth our time. And so instead, I would suggest that people focus on using their money in ways that will actually improve the minutes and hours of their daily life.
All right, what's an example of that?
Well, I think a great example is a dog. So if you're deciding between buying a dog versus buying a goldfish, the goldfish is clearly the cheaper option. It requires a lot less of your time. But a dog, buying a dog and putting all that money into having a dog, will change the way you spend your time. So you're basically committing yourself to spending lots of time, you know, walking the dog outside, which we know is good for your happiness, connecting with, you know, neighbors who, you know, have dogs who your dog runs up and sniffs, another thing that's good for happiness. So having a dog fundamentally alters the way you spend your time in ways that we know are actually good for your happiness.
Okay, so all of those mere minutes I could spend admiring those shoes on my feet doesn't mean much of anything?
Well, you know, I don't think we should completely discount that, right? So as long as you really make those shoes a treat and continue to appreciate them, then that's great. But often many of our purchases do sort of fade into the background and they don't really change the way you're spending your time. Now, if you don't have a pair of shoes, so you can't go outside because you have no shoes, then those shoes are going to make a difference in the way you spend your time. But buying that 12th pair of high heels is not going to change whether you're able to, you know, go out with friends on a Friday night.
Number four on your list of principles to spend more happily is pay now, consume later, the opposite of our credit-driven consumption market. So what does that mean? Avoid the impulse buy?
Well, the idea here is that we basically want people to do exactly the opposite of what they normally do. So very standard consumption pattern in modern life is that we, you know, get whatever we want right away and often pay for it much later. And we suggest people should do the exact opposite. So pay up front and delay consumption. And the idea here is that this way you get the pain of paying out of the way up front, which is good because it can kind of restrain our spending by making payment painful in the moment. That can keep us from overspending. And then by delaying consumption, we can reap a lot of free pleasure in the form of anticipation.
Let's just go back to the example of shoes, shall we? Rather than
sure,
putting
let's stick with shoes.
Rather than putting it on a credit card, it makes me think of, you know, what I used to do as a teenager. If I love something, I'd put it on layaway. I'd pay for it first and then have it.
Yeah, you know, layaway is a great old school happiness intervention. So if you pay for something first, then, you know, all the while as you're sort of making those payments, you know that something good is coming to you in the future. And that turns out to be really important because the future has an emotional power over us that the past simply doesn't. You know, you think the past and the future should be emotionally equivalent, but research shows they're not. We care about what's coming in the future. So if something good like that pair of shoes is coming to you in the future, that's going to provide you with more pleasure than if you already got those shoes in the past. So anticipation is actually this really potent form of pleasure that I think we often overlook in making spending decisions.
Wow. Elizabeth, your final principle to happier spending is to invest in others. What does the research say about how this works?
Well, the research suggests that instead of spending money on yourself, you can actually get more happiness by using it to benefit other people, whether that means donating money to a charity that you care about or just treating a friend to dinner.
What's an example of investing in others that doesn't necessarily mean a huge expenditure?
Well, I think the most remarkable finding from our work is that spending as little as $5 on a given day on somebody else can make a difference for our own happiness. And in fact, remarkably, we see this effect emerge all over the world. So we've conducted experiments not only in Canada and the United States, but also in places like India, Uganda, and South Africa. And what we see is that in some of these countries where people are really struggling to meet their own basic needs, we still find that people experience greater happiness when they use their money to benefit somebody else. So, for example, one participant in Canada told us about, you know, treating her mom to, I think, a scarf that she bought at the mall, while people in Uganda told us about things like buying malaria medication for a friend who was dying. And, you know, on the surface, these just seem like so different that how could we possibly see equivalent effects? And yet what we see in both countries is that people are getting more happiness when they're using their money to benefit somebody else.
Has the way that you spend changed since putting this book together?
Absolutely. So for one thing, I definitely donate more money to charity now. But I also feel more free to spend money on in certain areas of my life. So, for example, I actually had a baby about a year and a half ago, and he was the worst sleeper ever. He would only sleep in our arms. And so we finally paid somebody called a night doula an incredible amount of money to come and stay up with him all night for two nights, and she taught him how to sleep. Now, this amount of money that we spent, I couldn't have justified to myself before writing this book. But in writing this book, I really realized if you can spend money in a way that will alter the way you spend your time, that is happy money. And so when we paid this night doula, she changed the way that we spent the hours of 3 a.m. to 7 a.m. So we were able, my husband and I were actually able to return to our own bed, sleep in our bed, and not be holding an infant all night. And so that was probably some of the best money that I've ever spent. And I think I felt free to do so partly because of this research that we've done.
Elizabeth Dunn, thank you. Feels like time well spent.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Elizabeth Dunn, Associate Professor of Psychology at the University of British Columbia. She is co-author with Michael Norton of the Harvard Business School of the book Happy Money, The Science of Happier Spending. It is now out on paperback, and you'll find more on the book at wordofmouthradio.org.